Okay. So thanks. Thank you very much for inviting me to speak here. So I guess I'll talk about advances in quantum query complexity. So some of my work is some of related work. Should I move this up a bit? Is that better? Okay, anyway. This is my first time in Perimeter Institute. So I grew up in Waterloo, so I sort of know this town pretty well, but I've never kind of stepped into this building. It's kind of nice. So it reminds me of this data center a bit, where my office is at MIT. You have all these corridors that see each other and glass walls and so on. One difference, though, that I think you guys really got it right here is that in the data center we have whiteboards. So here everything is blackboard. So I'm fully on the blackboard side of things. I'm not sure. Blackboards matter, maybe that's the anyway. All right. So I'll talk about advances in quantum query complexity. So a lot of this work is with Scott Aronson and Robin Kothari. Let's see. So what is query complexity? It's kind of like a very simple model of computation where you're given n boxes, and each of the boxes contains one bit, like a 0 or 1. And the goal is to compute a function f on those bits, and you know f in advance, right? And also your goal is to open as few boxes as possible. So for example, if f is OR, so you're computing the OR of the bits, right? And you can say, okay, give me, is this visible here? Give me this bit here. Can you guys, is this arrow too faded? I don't know if it's okay. All right. So give me this box here, and you open it, and you get a 0. Give me this one here, you open it, you get a 0. If you get a 1, you can stop, right? Because the OR of these bits is now 1. Okay. So the cost that we care about is we care about the worst case input, and we care about the number of queries you're going to make in the worst case. Okay, so in the worst case for OR, in the worst case for OR, you open all the boxes and they're all 0. And you can't be sure that they're all 0 until you open the very last box. So in the very worst case, at least with a deterministic algorithm, you're going to need n queries if there are n boxes. Here, n is the number of boxes. With a randomized algorithm, even if you're allowed some error, you still need roughly n queries, depending on exactly how much error you're allowed. Right? But with a quantum algorithm, we know there's Grover's algorithm, Grover search. You can do it in roughly root n queries. Right? And the nice thing about query complexity is that we can actually prove these. Maybe not so exciting to you guys, but in complexity theory, being able to prove something is a big deal because everything is like, we assume p versus np and one-way functions exist, and the polynomial hierarchy doesn't collapse, and so on. Okay. So one thing I want to mention about query complexity is, so this is a nice model, but often we want to modify just a little bit and allow a promise on the input, which means now it's the same situation as before, but you know something about what the boxes contain. So for example, maybe you know that the boxes either contain mostly zeros or mostly ones or something. I wanted to say that it's easy to solve majority here. I should have put f equals majority with an algorithm. With a randomized algorithm, you can solve majority. You can ask, are most of the bits more than half the bits 1 or more than half the bits 0? If you're sure that at least 2/3 are ones or at most 1/3 are ones, then you can just randomly sample. Right? And no matter how the bits are arranged in the box, if you choose randomly, you only need to open a few boxes before you're sure which which is the case, whether it's mostly ones or mostly zeros. But with a deterministic algorithm, you can never be sure right? With a deterministic algorithm, because you don't know how the boxes are arranged, they're arranged worst case. Maybe they're arranged exactly to fool you, right? You try to open the boxes and you keep seeing zeros, even though most of the boxes contain ones. And so you're never sure whether most of the boxes are ones or most of the boxes are zero, right? So this is sort of what can happen in the promise setting when you know something about the boxes, what the boxes contain. So this is, I will sometimes call this the partial function model, the promise setting or the partial function model. Okay. So the model makes sense so far. The questions we usually ask in query complexity are questions like how much does it help to have randomness or quantumness, basically? How much do various computational resources help? And you can ask about other resources that complexity theorists care about, like non-determinism and so on. Most of those make sense in this model. So for example, you could ask, is there a function that can be solved with very few randomized queries, but which require a lot of deterministic queries? And this majority thing where you had a promise that the input either has two-thirds ones or one-thirds ones, that problem was an example of a problem that can be solved quickly with a randomized algorithm, but cannot be solved quickly with a deterministic algorithm. Another question you can ask is like, when do these resources help? So, you know, yeah, that function has this property, but like, what structure must a function have in order to have such a gap, right? So maybe you can say functions that look like this have speedups, have randomized speedups. Functions that look like this do not have randomized speedups, or quantum speedups. And the other question that we often ask is, what are good lower bound techniques? You know, if you give me a function and if I want to show that its randomized query complexity is a certain amount, the upper bound is easy. I just give you the algorithm, right? Maybe you need to analyze the algorithm, but I describe how to solve the function by only opening so many boxes. But to lower bound, you need to prove that an algorithm doesn't exist, right? And proving an algorithm doesn't exist can be difficult. And so we have various lower bound techniques that basically were studied in order to try to answer this. Many of them were introduced to try to answer this kind of how much do resources help types of questions. So I'll talk about sort of each of these. Primarily I'll talk about the how much question, how much speedup is possible. Right. Just is the model clear to everyone? I don't know how much you guys have seen this before. Okay. All right. So for partial functions, we saw an exponential speedup. This is the majority thing. I should say f equals majority here. This is an n versus one speedup. So it's basically the maximum speedup you can hope for, right? I just want to like emphasize that n here is the biggest, is the slowest you can get, because n means opening all the boxes. Like, for example, you know, the function can be, the halting problem. You know, does the input encode a program that eventually halts? And the query complexity will still be at most n, right? Because we don't care about computation time. We only care about how many boxes you open. So for partial functions, at least randomized versus deterministic, we know the answer. You can get 1 versus n. For quantum versus randomized, the situation is as follows. So Simon sort of basically gave the first Oracle separation, I guess, the first demonstration that quantum algorithms sometimes give exponential speedups. And this was the motivation for Shor's algorithm. It's a log n versus root n type of speedup for a partial function. And this is basically the best we know. It was improved fairly recently just to like a 1 versus root n speedup. And this is a four-relation problem. So it's still open to whether you can get this root n to be larger. Aronson and Bynes gave a candidate function that has log n versus n. And they show 1 versus n is impossible. So they show sort of if you want one versus something, then you should have one versus root n. But you could hope for a log n versus n, and they have a candidate. But they can't prove this lower bound. They can't prove that with randomized square complexity, there's no better algorithm. Okay. So this is the situation for partial functions. So we sort of know where we stand. We know, like, okay, deterministic versus randomized, the situation is settled. Randomized versus quantum, sort of. Well, we have a 1 versus root n. We want a log n versus n, and we have a candidate. So what about total functions? So this is when there's no promise. You don't know what's inside the boxes at all. You have the function is defined on any arrangement of the boxes. So then there's this kind of interesting theorem in 98, and also a bit earlier, Nissan proved some of this. It shows a polynomial relationship between deterministic and randomized, or randomized and quantum. So all of the model, all the models we've seen, the deterministic, randomized, and quantum, are polynomially related for total functions. So this is kind of very surprising. It's saying, you know, Simons or Shor type speedups, you can't get them if you don't know something about how the bits are arranged in the boxes. Right. So, okay, but still, you could ask, okay, so we can't get exponential speedups, but how much polynomial speedup can we get? Right. So you can ask, okay, so. So in 86, Sachs and Wigerson introduced this AND/OR tree. Has a deterministic square complexity n, randomized square complexity n to the 0.753. So I should mention basically that getting a gap between deterministic and randomized at all is like trickier than it sounds. So like if you just try to think of any function for which you can open less boxes if you're allowed to choose randomness and make error than if you're not allowed. It's hard to think of any such function. So this is almost like the only example we had. And of course, there's Grover 96 had a quadratic gap. And this is for the OR function. So this is a total function here. And so this is where things stood until 2015. In 2015, a lot of things like all happened in a row. So I guess it all started with like this GPW result. They introduced a function, it's called a pointer function, a function that uses pointers. And it gave a quadratic separation between deterministic query complexity and this degree thing, which is a lower bound technique for deterministic query complexity. Then these guys, Ambinus, Belotis, Bellows, Lee, Santa, and Smotros, they sort of noticed that this idea here can be used to separate everything from everything, pretty much. And they showed a quadratic separation between D and R. So this is showing randomized can help quadratically, beating Sachs and Wigerson. They show a power 4 separation between deterministic algorithms and quantum algorithms for total functions. So this is beating Grover search, and many other separations. So what they didn't show is a gap between randomized and quantum that's better than Grover search. So here, there's still a randomized algorithm here. There's just not a deterministic algorithm. So I kind of used some of their ideas and showed a power 2.5 separation between randomized and quantum.
So they had a power 4 separation between D of F and Q of F.
Yeah.
But it's a randomized algorithm, they just didn't know its complexity?
No, so it's the same. So the complexity was right in between. So it was, this is a power 4 separation.
The quadratic separation between R and Q we already had from Grover.
Yeah.
So that's why you're saying they didn't.
Yeah. They didn't improve on Grover. So they had a quadratic separation, but. Yeah, it's basically, so their quantum speedup was Grover search. So they took this function that has a power 2 between R and D, and then they used Grover search. So now it's a power 4 between Q and D. Okay.
What's AND/OR and Q?
Sorry?
What
yeah, so these are other models. Okay, so R0 is when you're allowed randomness, but at the end of the day, you have to succeed with certainty. So it's basically you run your algorithm, and if it succeeds, it tells you, okay, this is the answer, and it's 100% certain of the answer. It's not allowed any error. But you don't know how long the algorithm will take to run. So like, you know, if you try to stop it after a certain number of queries, maybe it will say, I'm not done yet. And then we measure its expected number of queries. So you measure the expected runtime. So another way of saying it is maybe if you stop it after, you know, 100 times its expectation, well, then you know that it must be done 99% of the time. You only have to be very unlucky for it to take more than 100 times its expectation. So it's sort of you count its expectation, but it has to succeed with certainty. This is a weaker model than R, but a stronger model than D. And QE is exact quantum algorithm. So this is a quantum algorithm has to be exact, has to give you the answer deterministically. But here we don't take expectations. So we don't allow it to, with very small probability, take a very long time, like we allowed for randomized. It has to always take this amount of queries. It has to always terminate deterministically as well. If you try to define RE, you'll get D. That's why people don't like write RE. If you try to say you're allowed randomness, but succeed with 100% and terminate with 100%, well, the randomness doesn't help. You can always just initialize the random bits to all zeros or something, and you know that you have to succeed, so it will succeed, and now it's a deterministic algorithm. Okay, so these are, these are other models. I guess they're also interesting, but I guess really these are the major players in my opinion. I had this 2.5 separation between randomized and quantum query complexity. And then we sort of incorporated that into a bigger framework where we reproved some of this. We reproved mostly their more minor results, mostly the R0 and QE results. We can't reprove all of the results. And we reprove this gap as well, all in sort of a unified cheat sheet framework that I'll describe. And we also get, I guess, sort of a quantum version of this theorem a little bit. So this was saying this one specific lower bound technique, like a polynomial method for deterministic algorithms, well, it's not that good. It can be quadratically off. This is saying the approximate degree, so it's a polynomial method for quantum query complexity, that can be power 4 off. That can be fourth power, like, smaller. So I'll talk about the super Grover speedup, the 2.5 separation, and also like the cheat sheet framework that lets you do a bunch of these other separations. And the idea is this. So you start with this two-third, like a partial function, and you try to make it total. So let's start with the two-thirds function. F of x equals 1 if x is two-thirds 1s, 0 if it's two-thirds 0s. And it looks like this in the Hamming diagram. So right, if this is like the all 0 string down here and the all 1 string up here, this is like the Hamming weight diagram, then in this region the function is 1, in this the function is 0, and here the function is not defined and we're promised we'll never get inputs that whose Hamming weight is in here. And you can ask, okay, well, what if we try to turn this function total by just saying, well, if x was not in the domain, set f of x to be 0. We can define a new function, which is now total. Now it's defined on every point in the domain. So this is coloring this blue. And the problem is that, like, well, what is the problem? Before, our randomized algorithm was sampling a few bits and seeing if they're mostly 1s or mostly 0s, and then it can already be pretty certain whether the input's mostly 1 or mostly 0s. But now you can have inputs that sort of straddle this middle line here that either have exactly 2/3 1s or 1 less, 1 too little. And that makes a difference, the way we define the function, that makes a difference between f of x equals 0 and f of x equals 1. Right? But detecting whether the number of 1s is exactly 2/3 n or 1 less, that's a very difficult task, even for a randomized algorithm. So you don't get any speed up if you do this. So really, the problem is that the promise itself is difficult for the randomized algorithm. So, you know, if this is like the promise, you know, you have to, is a new function that outputs one if you're in the promise of the old function, or zero if you're not in the promise of the old function. This promise function is a difficult function for a randomized algorithm. If it was easy, then we would get a total function. Okay, so the step one of the cheat sheet method is to compose the function with ANDOR. So we take what is ANDOR, first of all? ANDOR is this function. It arranges the boxes in a matrix like this, and then it asks, is there an all ones column? Okay, so for example, here there's an all ones column. So the value of the function is 1, right? And here, there's not an all ones column in this. I changed the boxes a bit. So now the value of the function is 0. And the nice thing about this problem, the ANDOR problem, is that if I knew what's in the boxes, and I just wanted to prove to you that the value of the function is 1, I could reveal these yellow boxes. And I can reveal root n boxes, right? They're n boxes in total. So I can reveal like root n boxes and prove to you that the value of the function is 1. And I can also reveal root n boxes to prove to you the value of the function is 0. So no matter how the boxes are arranged, if there is no all ones column, that means there is a 0 in every column. So if I showed you the 0 in every column, if I showed you these yellow boxes, you'll be convinced. So in both cases, I only need to show you root n. So it's sort of a function that's easy to certify. And the idea is you take your partial function, right, that has a big gap between the models you care about, say a big gap between randomized and quantum, or a big gap between deterministic and randomized. And now you change, you replace like each box with this matrix of boxes of size n by n. And you say the new function g will be the value of the old function f composed with and or on these on this matrix. So I replace every bit here with a matrix, and my new function is calculate and or on the matrix, right? And then calculate f of all those answers. Okay, so if you do this, if we do this and we take f to be a function, let's say we're going for a randomized versus quantum speedup. So we could take f equals 4 relation. And you know, in that case, with the randomized algorithm, how long would it take to solve g? So for relation can be solved in root n queries. So you need root n to solve f. But instead of opening a box now, you have to calculate an ANDOR instance. So every time you would open a box with your randomized algorithm, you would have to solve an ANDOR instance, which takes n squared. So if this is an n by n matrix, your randomized algorithm for g will take n to the 2.5. But the quantum algorithm will actually only take n. Right? So the quantum algorithm, what does it do? Well, there's a quantum algorithm for f that takes only one query. And for ANDOR, you can use Grover search to get an algorithm with n queries that solves it. And you can sort of compose the algorithm and get a quantum algorithm that uses only n queries for g. But g is not a total function, right? This is, f here still has a promise, right? You can only solve f if these boxes, the answers of the ANDORs, satisfy the promise of for relation. Otherwise, there is no quantum algorithm for solving f. So the function g that we get here is still a promise problem. So the step two is we hide a cheat sheet. So step two is we take this input to g, and we add, as additional input, a giant array. And then we do this. We sort of make a cheat sheet of, you know, for every one of these ANDOR copies, where is its all ones column, or where is the zero in each column? So we write down the small certificates for every ANDOR instance, and we write this all down on a cheat sheet. And then we take this cheat sheet and we hide it somewhere in a giant array. Okay, we'll see why we do this in a minute. So we're sort of hoping all of this is provided in the input. We're sort of, the input will consist on this G and this giant array, and we're hoping that somewhere in the input is hidden this cheat sheet that helps us understand what this input to G is. And then we want to sort of be able to find the cheat sheet. So the way that's going to work is we're going to make 100 log n copies of G and a giant array of size n to the 100. And the cheat sheet will lie here, and it will now tell us the certificates. It will tell us all we want to know about everything, about all the and/or instances and all the inputs to G. Okay, so here, so this is the cheat sheet framework. So the cheat sheet framework is there's this function G, which is the F, which is a partial function composed with and/or. If you calculate all the G's, you get 100 log n bits. If you go to that address in an array of size n to the 100, you should get a cheat sheet that tells you, that proves to you what all the and/or instances really evaluated to. It gives you, you know, an all ones column in each, or it gives you zero in every column in each. So it proves to you what all of these and/or instances. If you find this cheat sheet, you know what's going on completely. Okay. So, all right. What is the function here? All right, now, the function here, this final function, is going to be, does the input really look like this? Does the input really look like, you know, inputs to G that satisfy the for relation promise? The F inside here satisfies the for relation promise, okay? Such that when you evaluate for relation composed with and/or on all of these instances, and you go to that address in the array, you really do get a cheat sheet that points, gives you the places, the locations of the all ones column or the zeros in every one of the and/or instances. Does the input look like that or does it not? Okay, so if the input looks like that, the value of the final function is 1. And if the input does not look like that, the value of the final function is 0. Okay, so now let's see what we did here. What is going on? So first of all, it's a total function, right? Because there's now no longer a promise. Before there was a promise on what sort of these look like, but now they can look like anything, and if they don't satisfy the for relation promise, the value of the function is 0. So this is a total function. But we have a fast quantum algorithm, so let's see what the quantum algorithm looks like. Well, it just trusts that everything satisfies the promise and later verify. So we will first sort of proceed as if we think that this satisfies the for relation promise and run the algorithm for for relation composed with and/or for every one of the g's. There's only like log n of them, so if we can solve one, we can solve all of them with only a log loss. Now, if this doesn't satisfy the for relation promise, maybe our algorithm completely crashes. But that's OK. Then we output 0. If the algorithm discovered that it crashes and can't proceed, well, we know that this didn't satisfy the for relation promise, so the whole function evaluates to 0. OK? So now suppose we sort of the algorithm succeeded, right? So we solved for relation composed with and/or on all these g's. Then we can go to this location in the array, and we can check whether we can check sort of what all the and/or instances evaluate to, and check that they really evaluate to things that satisfy the promise. So now we can sort of check that we weren't lied to, that it wasn't just off from satisfying the promise, it really did satisfy the promise. And that's because we have this magical cheat sheet. And if this check fails, then we don't know whether the cheat sheet was faulty or these things didn't satisfy the promise. But that doesn't matter. We can just output 0. We only output 1 if this cheat sheet is valid and all of these guys really satisfy the for relation promise. I don't know if I completely lost you guys. Maybe I should just say sort of the idea is you take a completely arbitrary partial function. Normally, the problem would be if you try, if you, the problem with turning things total is that it's hard to check whether the promise was satisfied or not, right? So you have a function. If the promise is satisfied, it's easy to solve. But what's hard is to check if the promise was satisfied. So what we do is first make it easier to check if the promise was satisfied, at least if you know where to look, right? At least, so it might be the case that the promise, it's so hard to check whether the promise was satisfied that even if I know the input, I can't convince you the promise is satisfied without showing you the whole input. So by default, that's the case. So the first step we do is add these andors. That makes it at least easy to check that the promise is satisfied if you know where to look, because I can show you all ones or zero in every column. Right? So now we have this new function g that is still a promise problem, but at least I can show you that the promise is satisfied. Like, if I know where to look, I can show you with few-ish bits that the promise is satisfied. And then, well, the me showing you, I'm sitting here. I'm going to sit somewhere in a giant array, okay? And you can find me by solving all these functions, basically. And you have a quantum algorithm that solves these guys, assuming the promise holds. So if the promise truly holds on each of these, you can run the quantum algorithm and you can find me. And then I will give you the proof that all these promises hold, okay? Right? Why can't I just sit outside of the array? Why do I have to hide inside an array? Right? Because I'm hiding from the randomized algorithm. We want the randomized algorithm not to be able to find me, or else it will be able to solve the function too. Right? The idea is, by sitting somewhere in a giant array, and you only know the location by solving these guys, you force the algorithm to solve this for relation composed with andor. So you basically force the algorithm to solve for relation, and that's what randomized algorithms cannot do. Any questions on this? All right, I'll move on. Okay, let's see. Clicker stuck. There we go. Okay, so I'll just briefly mention, without going into the details, some other uses for this cheat sheet framework. So, all right, I guess we had this, in our paper, we had this big table of like query complexity measures by query complexity measures and what the best gaps are for total function. So you can see, like, for a bunch of these, like, you can see, for example, here, randomized versus, let's do randomized versus quantum, the one we just saw. So we just saw 2.5 separation, where, right, randomized is power 2.5 slower than quantum. We don't know if that's tight. We only know that you can't do better than 6. So that these are the two numbers. What we know, the separation we know, and the sort of upper bound. So in red is what we can prove using cheat sheet, and in gray is what we sort of reprove using cheat sheet. That was mostly from unbiased et al. So I'll just show you this one because it's kind of entertaining. This one, so the separation is between quantum and the polynomial method, quantum query complexity and the approximate degree, which is sort of the lower bound technique for it. And we start with K-sum, which was studied by Bell and Spalek. I guess K-sum is a famous problem, but for quantum query complexity, it was there's a nice lower bound by Bell and Spalek. I won't go into what it is. I'll just denote it by this calculator with a zero on it. And what we do is we sort of modify it to this block K-sum. So it's like a negated variant of K-sum. I usually denote it by a calculator with a goatee, because like the evil twin of K-sum. And then we compose block K-sum with K-sum, and we get this BKK thing. And then we just compose that with itself a bunch of times, because that's always a good thing to do. And then we add a cheat sheet. And that gives you this 4 minus little 01, right? OK, so that was actually, that was only a warm-up, because that was an easy one. So there's some crazier ones since. These guys, Ambinus, Kokainis, and Kothari, they created a function that I like to call the I heard you like cheat sheets function. They take like an andor cheat sheet like this, and then they compose andor with an andor cheat sheet, and then they add another cheat sheet, and then they just keep doing this a bunch of times. And then they do they recursively do this a bunch of times, like root log n times or something, and then they get a gap between deterministic query complexity and this is unambiguous certificate complexity. The main thing about this measure is it's basically larger than all lower bound techniques pretty much all lower bound techniques for deterministic query complexity, go through this guy. So this is saying, we can lower bound this without going through any of the known lower bound techniques, I guess. And then they have something even worse, which is they take this Go T calculator guy and they compose it with and then they add a cheat sheet. And then they compose him again with the cheat sheet version. And they keep doing this, adding more cheat sheets. And at the end, they get a gap between quantum query complexity and this sort of really powerful lower bound technique. Now, quantum query complexity doesn't even always have to be larger than this thing. This thing can sometimes be larger than quantum query complexity. But for this function, quantum query complexity is larger. And what is interesting about that is we just said this is sort of bigger than all lower bound techniques. So if you consider quantum query complexity as a lower bound technique, then it's a better lower bound technique than everything else, right? If you kind of think of quantum query complexity, we have some quantum only lower bound techniques that don't go through this. So if you think of let's say the quantum query complexity as the negative weight adversary method or something, then it can beat all other lower bound techniques. Other work with cheat sheets. We had this idea in a workshop in Singapore to do cheat sheets in communication complexity. This is roughly what I remember from that workshop. So basically just take the same separation, but now do it in communication complexity. And so that that works nicely. We get the 2.5 separation. And we get this analog of the D versus UC result, the I heard you like cheat sheets result. We get that one too. So what is new? What is the difficult thing here? The difficult thing here is like showing the lower bound for randomized communication. So I didn't even talk about how you show the lower bound for query. Like, why can't a randomized algorithm solve the cheat sheet function? In query, things are not so hard. You can sort of just play with it, and eventually it works. In communication complexity, proving lower bounds is very difficult. So our main contribution is sort of proving a cheat sheet theorem, we called it, like a theorem that says if you take a function and you have a lower bound on its communication complexity, and now you add a cheat sheet, so you do this cheat sheet modification, it shouldn't become easier. It can only become harder, the function. So we show this for the randomized model, for randomized communication. And we have an upcoming work where we show a cheat sheet theorem for quantum communication. And we get, this one is not so good. The parameters here are a bit weak. And we get a separation between quantum communication and something called the approximate log rank. This is sort of the only way to lower bound quantum communication until very recently. So this is like sort of every way of lower bounding quantum communication goes through this, and we can separate these now using quantum information techniques. So this is like more modern techniques. Okay. So I guess one, I don't know if you have questions so far. One question that I think is interesting is, can we get better lower bound techniques? So, we just said, well, actually, these cheat sheet things can give you functions for which a lot of the lower bound techniques don't work. So can we get better lower bound techniques? So for quantum query complexity, there's actually a tight technique, which is the negative weight adversary method. So it's kind of hard to use, but, I narrowly avoided saying that quantum query complexity can be separated from all its lower bound techniques, because that's not true. There's a tight one. This is a very interesting result, because it's not the case for randomized query complexity. So now deterministic complexity is usually you don't really need a technique. You can sort of eyeball it and it works. So the real question is, are there better lower bound techniques for randomized query complexity? And you might even hope for something like this. So here we have a tight technique. This is complete magic. Ben Reichardt showed that it's tight. We don't have any such magic for randomized query complexity. We don't know if it's because it doesn't exist or we just somehow don't understand as randomized query complexity as much as quantum. Or did we just get really lucky here? Maybe this was some lucky accident that we, I don't know. On randomized lower bounds, I guess I'll just briefly talk about randomized lower bounds. You can ask, how do we even prove the cheat sheet theorems if cheat sheets can separate these lower bound techniques from randomized query? Like, how do you show that a function, how do you show the randomized query complexity is bigger than its lower bound without using some lower bound? Right? And basically, the idea is there's specialized theorems that don't really feel like general techniques, and they help you specifically for like cheat sheets. Or alternatively, the answer is that cheat sheet lower bounds were kind of annoying and ad hoc, and they didn't feel like a sort of generic technique. So I have a work with Robin Kothari where we introduce a technique called sabotage query complexity, and it makes some of the cheat sheet proofs a little nicer. I think there's still some work to go. There's still some ways to go. It's not a general lower bound technique, and it has its own weaknesses. And mainly, this is used for composition theorems if you want to show that F composed G is at least as hard as F times G. It's like the difficulty of F times the difficulty of G. So we have some work in the direction of composition theorems, although we can't prove a general one. Okay. Any questions so far? I don't know if So this technique page, for partial functions, often we can separate things from their lower bound techniques even more. But when we mean a new lower bound technique, I guess usually it works for partial functions too. For example, the negative weighted adversary method is tight even for partial functions. It's just always tight. This technique can work for partial functions, but it's not tight. For total functions, we don't know a separation for this one. But for partial functions, we do. So I do have a part two, which is only like three slides. So this is sort of unrelated to cheat sheets and so on. The question is, forget about total functions now. Let's talk about exponential speedups, right? When are they possible? So we know they are possible. We have examples that give exponential speedups. So the question is, which functions have them and which functions don't? So this is sort of a question I've been interested in. So Aronson and Bynes kind of showed that you need some structure. They had this need for structure in quantum speedups paper, and they said, okay, well, if the function is really symmetric and the promise is also really symmetric, there is no exponential speedup. So basically, if the function looks like collision, there is no speedup. So even this was very difficult to show. So the collision lower bound, I was open for years. This is a nice generalization that says anything that's as symmetric as collision does not have exponential quantum speedup. So you need some structure. I had a result a while back, maybe it was 12 or 13. It basically said for some specific type of promises, there is no exponential speedup. So for if the promise is just that your input is a permutation, like if your input encodes a permutation of the numbers 1 through n, like the boxes contain the numbers 1 through n in some order, then there's no exponential speedup. Or if you just have a promise on the Hamming weight. So if you know that the Hamming weight is n over 3 or 2n over 3 like before, then you can have a deterministic versus randomized, but you won't have a randomized versus quantum exponential speedup. So it's sort of like a Beals et al. Type result. that says, oh, there's like a power 16 or something relationship instead of a power 6 relationship. And then recently,
I mean, permutation problem seems kind of weird, right? Because I could ask my function to start by taking whatever number to some binary value, and that way I can encode any binary string in 1 through n. And then I just get a permutation of any binary string, right?
Sorry. So, yeah.
Is this boiled down to the, like, if I restrict to like a binary setting, is this boiled down to the fact that I have a fixed number of ones?
Yeah. So this is right. That's right. So this is this observation. Yes.
Yeah.
So if you So this is just unions of these as you pointed out. So permutation is very similar to the case where you have a fixed number of ones and a fixed number of zeros. But only sort of one Hamming level, sort of one. And this is saying you can generalize that to any number of Hamming levels. And if you tell me the Hamming weight is this, this, or this, there's no speed up. Okay. All right. And then we had a recent result that says you can usually sculpt speed ups. This is saying, okay, if you fix the function in advance, if you fix function f in advance, and then you get to choose a promise afterwards. Imagine, say, the OR function or parity or something like that. Can you get a speed up or not just by fixing the promise, choosing the promise after you fix the function? For which functions can you get a promise? And the result is, for most functions, surprisingly, you can get an exponential speed up. So if you fix the function, and then you ask, all right, is there a sub-promise of this? Can I throw away bad inputs such that now it's still hard for randomized, but it's easy for quantum? Then for most functions, you can do this. So if you picked a random function, that would be possible. And in fact, we sort of had a characterization using an H index. So our conclusion from this was basically quantum speedups are all about the promise. So if I just give you a function, like a total function, so there's no speedup, there's no exponential speedup because it's total. Very often, unless the function has a very specific form, very often you will be able to find a hidden function somewhere inside, such that if you throw out all the other inputs and restrict to that, there'll be an exponential quantum speedup. The exceptions to this are basically functions that look like OR. So OR is sort of the one exception, in a sense. For OR, you cannot do this. You always get exactly the Grover speedup. So Scott proved this in 2006. If you have, if you restrict to a promise where, so the OR function, there's only one input that evaluates to zero. That's the all zero string. Every other input evaluates to one. So if you throw away that input, you get a constant function, right? You get all the models solve it with no queries. They just output one. So you shouldn't throw away the all zeros. And no matter how you throw away the ones, you can speed up the randomized algorithm. You can speed up the quantum. But you can't speed up quantum without speeding up randomized. They always speed up together. So you don't get a gap. But for many other functions, almost all of the functions, you do get a gap. And this is sort of saying, it wasn't really about the function. It was about the promise. So really, the question should be the question from the previous slide. For which promises can you get a speed up? For which promises can you not get a speed up? We had this side result that's too faint to see here. There is no exponential speed up if the promised set, the set of strings in my promise, is polynomial sized, is small, then you don't have an exponential. You cannot have an exponential quantum speedup. You go back to a quadratic Grover's style speedup. So I guess that's all I had to say. So some open problems. Basically, everything is still open. So what is the largest possible quantum speedup for a total function? So we have this 2.5. It would improve to a 3 if you can improve if you prove the log n versus n for a partial function, because then you could just use that instead of for relation as the partial function you start with. So you can sort of improve to 3 under that conjecture, but the upper bound is 6. What is the largest possible quantum speedup for a partial function? So that's the question adjusted. So log n versus n is this k-fold for relation conjecture. We don't know how to prove the randomized lower bound. What are some other promises on which there aren't exponential quantum speedups? So this is my personal favorite, which is like, forget about all these polynomial speedups. Target exponential speedups. Show that quantum algorithms, like, on most promises can't do anything or something. Or just say on many promises, on some large class of promises, they can't help. And then on this other class of promises, you can do Simons, or you can do Shor, or you can do for relation. So really characterize, in terms of a promise, when you have exponential quantum speedups, when you don't. And the last question is sort of to help with these other ones. What are some better lower bound techniques for randomized algorithms? This is like surprisingly weird that randomized algorithms are so poorly understood. But for example, if you had better lower bound techniques, perhaps you can solve this question. Because the question here is really just about lower bounding randomized algorithms. That's all. Thanks.
Yeah. So for that last question, so obviously the quantum lower bound techniques are also lower bounds on the randomized algorithms, but it's not going to help you get a separation. Is there some way or some examples where you basically are using the quantum technique, but you like put in some additional constraint that says it has to be a randomized algorithm?
So I don't know of one. So basically, I think this is like a very interesting approach, because we have these very artificial looking monstrous functions that I showed that show you that quantum algorithms can, this quantum lower bound technique, the negative weighted adversary bound, can be better than all of our randomized lower bound techniques sometimes. But the only examples of this we have are these monstrous functions. So you could ask, maybe you could take this, sometimes very powerful lower bound technique for quantum. So powerful it's even good for randomized on occasion. And sort of add a constraint that says, but now the algorithm is randomized, and get something larger. I've actually tried to work on this myself. It's very difficult to modify the negative weighted adversary bound and get anything that is still coherent, that still makes sense, that's still, yeah. So it's really strange. I feel like the negative weight adversary bound is really just complete magic, and any modification of it. So there are modifications of the non-negative weight. There are various modifications of the non-negative weight. So Ambianus's original adversary method. And for those, you can add various constraints and you get a randomized lower bound technique. And it does fall under the umbrella of all the things that are sometimes worse than the negative adversary method. So no matter how much you add constraints that say, but the algorithm is randomized, to the non-negative thing, it can still be less than the negative weight adversary bound. So it'd still be worse than quantum algorithms, even though it doesn't even have to lower bound quantum algorithms anymore. Right? But quantum algorithms can also be larger than it sometimes. So it's a very strange situation. It seems like the non-negative weight is easily modifiable, so you can try various modifications. But all of them are sort of sometimes beaten by the negative one, which seems very you can't really modify it without breaking everything, as far as I can tell. Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah.